The Meaning of Sri Ramanashramam by Geeta Bhatt. Geeta Bhatt, a devotee from New York City, interweaves the story of many pilgrims with her own, revealing the true meaning of Sri Ramanashramam and how the Maharishi continues to guide and bless seekers from the world over. This past February, I stayed at Sri Ramanashramam for a total of 10 days. Not a significant time in the larger scheme of things, but significant in the sense of what happens there, or more importantly, afterwards. My past visits to the abode of the Maharishi were filled with memorable events. Every minute of the stay was filled with observable occurrences. But this time, why wasn't I feeling anything? In fact, I was acutely aware, on the physical level, of all the noise, the crowds, and the routine of life at the ashramam. I sat in the old hall, observed the pujas to Bhagavan's shrine, listened to the Vedas, to the Tamil Parayana, walked around in the Matribhudeshwara temple, and did the Giri Pradakshina on Mahashivaratri night. But I couldn't understand why all these activities lacked the emotional intensity that I had always experienced and now expected. I walked around the ashramam with an inner ease and calm, but that I attributed to the familiarity of the surroundings and to the knowledge that I was accepted as an integral part of the larger Ramana family. Outwardly, it appeared as if the number of visitors to the ashramam had increased tenfold since the last time I was there. There were busloads of school children on field trips, villagers on pilgrimage, Western tourists on check out all the ashram's route, Hindu pilgrims, the curious, and those filled with wanderlust. Why did it feel to me that there were more of these than the sincere seekers? And then it happened. After dinner, when I was walking towards the main gate, there was a total blackout. All the lights went out. Not wanting to walk in the dark, I sat down in the little room used for leaving footwear. A young lady was sitting there, and a little later, an older woman joined us. We began to talk, and as the conversation progressed, the real purpose of my visit started to take shape. The young woman said she was from England and of Portuguese descent. This was her second visit to India, and now she had found what she was looking for, Bhagavan. She said, "I am probably the first Portuguese to come here. I haven't heard of any other Portuguese ever coming to Bhagavan." I told her that for the last few months, I was searching for the copy of the book, In Days of Great Peace, by Mauni Sadhu, a Portuguese devotee and a sadhaka who had written this most amazing book of his sadhana under Bhagavan's watchful gaze. This book had made a profound impression on me. On my second visit to Sri Ramanashramam, I read his account and was deeply moved and touched by his writing. In fact, there is only one copy of his book in the library, and that for reference only. The young woman, whose name I never got, was overwhelmed by this information and said, "It is strange that I should meet you." The older German woman, whose name is Eil, then started to tell us that she visited the master in the mid-1940s and had been coming to the ashram since then. Being of Jewish descent, she had fled Nazi Germany and was teaching in India. After hearing of Bhagavan, she travelled by train to Thiruvannamalai and then took a bullock cart to the ashram. She said, "I was wearing a frock and was dirty from the long journey. I felt that I should wash and change into more appropriate attire before going to see the sage. I was standing at the door of the old hall, that is the southern door that is now closed and leads into the Samadhi hall. When someone urged me to go to him right away, I walked in and stood in front of the sofa when he made the gentlest of gestures, inviting me to sit down. That is when everything disappeared. There was no sofa, no hall, no Maharishi, no me. The thought came, there is no floor, where can I sit? I don't know how long I stood there, but eventually I did sit down. In all my later conversations with Ayal, she talked about the all-pervading peace in the ashram of those days. She talked about the beauty and grace of those eyes. She kept trying to describe to me Bhagavan's complexion, which she thought was most unusual. She was light-skinned, lighter than some Europeans when they have lived in the East for a long time. She fumbled for the right words, looked at my hands, her own hands, and kept saying, "It was lighter than mine. It wasn't like yours. It was light. It was like, and then words failed her. Was it golden? Was it a translucent quality that she was looking for? Hearing her speak, I kept wondering how one describes divine manifestation in human terms. Yes, the form was human, but was it human? Didn't Bhagavan himself once say to a boyhood friend, "Yes, this is not the same body"? When it was observed that Venkatramana's skin was rough when they were young, and now it had an unusual softness to it. I don't know what she had witnessed, but this devotee left me feeling like I saw Bhagavan in the flesh. By sharing her memory of those moments, she transported me to his physical presence. Thank you, Ayal, for giving me a glimpse of that moment, that presence. The electricity was restored and we parted company. The next day, I saw Ayal again, but the young Portuguese devotee had moved on. On another evening, while in the dining hall, the person next to me asked, "Do you speak English?" Leonor Kunha, as I got to know her name later, had just gotten off the bus. This was her first visit to southern India and to Sri Ramanashramam. During the next few days, we sat in front of the bookstore, walked in and around the ashramam, and she shared her feelings and doubts with me. Leonor's spiritual quest had brought her to North India once before, and she was familiar with Sai Baba and some other sages, but nothing satisfied her yearning. Only a few days back, she had read the Portuguese translation of Arthur Osborne's book and then boarded a flight from Madras, leaving behind her husband and children. From the airport, she took a cab to the city bus stop and boarded a bus that dropped her at the ashram gate. She said, "This feels like home." The need to meet and seek out other living gurus was quickly leaving her. In fact, a visit to another teacher in town at the insistence of some other visitor left her feeling uncomfortable. She wanted to know if it was right to decline to go to other places and teachers when asked to by fellow pilgrims. Her face betrayed the intense emotion she was feeling, and I felt privileged to witness the outpouring of Bhagavan's grace on this sadhaka for whom all desires to be someplace else were dropping away. He had chosen her. She had arrived, a young Filipino-American from the US West Coast, also shared his story with me. He said he migrated to the West Coast as a teenager from the Philippines with his parents. He related the painful years he experienced in high school where he was teased for being different. He was drawn towards the martial arts and the New Age movement. Visiting a bookstore, he saw Bhagavan's face on a book cover. He said, "I went home but couldn't get that face out of my memory. It haunted me and I even started to see his face in my sleep. I had to go back to the bookstore and buy that book. Once I read it, there was no turning back. I had to come home. I had to come to him. Saying this, he turned towards the Samadhi Hall. There were tears in his eyes. I thanked him for sharing his story with me. He looked at me for a long time and said, "I knew you would understand," and we parted. A lady of Irish descent who lives in London comes to the ashram every winter for 3 months. She loves everything about India. One morning, after completing the inner pradakshina, we were sitting and taking breakfast in town when she started to tell me how she came to Bhagwan. "I'm not the sentimental type," she said, "but I have been drawn to matters spiritual for a long time. In London, some friends introduced me to Hinduism, and after some months of bhajans and pujas, I had had enough. Then I came on a sightseeing tour of South India. We visited every temple and palace. By the time we reached Tiruvannamalai, I had seen it all, heard it all. I was up to here," indicating over her head with it, "and was no longer interested. That evening, we were to visit Sri Ramanashramam. I came reluctantly because one more lecture on Advaita, one more puja, and I was ready to throw up. We walked into the Samadhi Hall and the life-size picture of Bhagavan was in front of me. I saw nothing but those eyes, that face. I knew that was the face of God. That is it. This is my story. A bright, smiling face, a face full of life and love, is how I will always remember her." There were many more that I spoke to or observed. There was the young girl from Australia, the woman from Texas, the couple from Bangalore, and the young woman from Japan that I got to know. All seekers, all drawn to the abode of the sage of Arunachala, all on their own inner journeys, guided by the Maharishi. All individuals, but still part of the larger crowd of humanity that daily visits the ashramam. Only on reflection, it is becoming clearer to me what the real purpose is of the crowd and activities at Sri Ramanashramam. At times, we see only the throngs and the crowd. We hear the traffic, the peacocks and monkeys, and miss the silence and grace that guides the sincere seekers. Even during Bhagavan's time, the guidance and grace worked unnoticed and unhindered by the outer activities of daily living. Today, it seems the crowds are there to hide the individual. Mass pujas are a cover for the individual surrender. The magic of the Maharishi goes on unobserved by the casual visitor. For those not yet devoured by Arunachala, Sri Ramanashramam is just another overcrowded holy place, once an abode of a sage and nothing more. But for those who sing, abandoning the outer world with mind and breath controlled, to meditate on thee within, the yogi sees thy light, O Arunachala, and finds his delight in thee. There are no crowds, no noise, no distraction, just the peace and presence.